Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to the Writer's Routine podcast. This is the show where we learn about how successful writers work. I guess the theory is that that should help you out with the book kicking around your head one day. We've got a bit of a different one, actually, today. We've got an illustrator on the show who learned how to write to make his own picture book. Now, his name is Richard Graham, and we talk about the difficulties of writing a book that's only got around 100 words in it, why different artists express their thoughts and their ideas using different methods, and also why sometimes if you're struggling, it's better to just walk away.
Being respectful of the creative process and allowing yourself time to breathe and also coming back to the work with the fresh eyes is really important. And I don't think it's a good idea to kind of force yourself to be creative. It's not really a job. It doesn't feel like a job. I kind of feel like it's like a safety space for me. And it's a nice place to come every day. Yeah, just make stuff.
Stay there. It's all on the way on this week's Writer's Routine. So this is our last show before Christmas and New Year, and I think the fact we're so close to Christmas is probably reflected in my voice. Yeah, I got a little bit of Christmas party voice going on now, so sorry about that. Bear with me, the show is definitely worth sticking around for. It's a different take on everything you've heard on Writer's Routine so far. Anyway, we'll talk more about our guests in just a sec. My name is Dan Simpson. Thanks for being there. I just want to say, because it's our last one before Christmas and New Year, where we take a few weeks off, we'll be back with more in 2018. Why don't you use that time to give, like me, a little Christmas present, I guess, and someone else's as well, and let them know about the podcast. If you're a writer and you're in a group, or you know someone else that's struggling to get a book out of their mind and down onto paper, why don't you tell them about Writer's Routine? Also, you can let people that you don't know about this show. Just get on the iTunes podcast store and leave us a review, because it really helps with the chart on there. And it's so easy as well. Just open it up, find Writer's Routine, and type in a few nice words. 5 stars would really help as well. And it would give me a lovely little Christmas treat. Just get on the iTunes podcast store and leave Writer's Routine a review. So today on the show, we've got the writer and illustrator, Richard Graham. He's an artist who upcycles old, unwanted furniture, bics, detritus, bric-a-brac and other stuff like that to make art. And using that art, he then makes a story and he brings it to life using animation and drawing, and ultimately writes a kid's picture books. Now, you see, in the day job, I see a lot of kids' books. And Richard's work, The Cranky Caterpillar, it's honestly just one of the best books I've ever opened. As soon as I lifted the first page, I was just blown away by what I saw in front of me. You can hear what it's about in the chat. It's a stunning work, though, because it's kind of dark and shadowy, and it moves into light and just beautiful colour. And I don't really know anything about art, but I can say that I've never seen kind of sketch work and an idea of a story like this being presented in that way on the page. Now, if you're an author and you're a little bit sceptical about how an artist and illustrator's view of writing can help you out, Richard does talk about the skill of being concise and fitting a story into 100 words, which is what you need to do with a kid's picture book. And I really think that is transferable across all methods of storytelling. I honestly think you could kind of cut half off of any book that I've read, TV show, film that I've seen, and it would only make it better. So I think that is really helpful for everyone. Now, today's Distinguished Diary, it's the working routine of an Academy Award-winning screenwriter who almost has to chain himself to the desk to get to work. That's on the way first. Let's get into our chat then with Richard Graham, artist and illustrator, with his writer's routine.
To be honest, I don't actually see myself as a writer. I kind of see myself as an illustrator, sculptor, who has happened to do a few courses at school, like English literature, and also did creative writing for a master's. But when I was doing that, I always had in the back of my mind, I'm doing this because I want to write picture books.
If you don't see yourself as naturally being a writer, because I think writing a picture book is probably a lot tougher than many people think it is. But let's kind of get back to the way you create then. Talk me through an average day.
Okay.
From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, when you're sitting down to do something creative, to work and to write in that as well.
Okay. For instance, the book that I'm working on at the moment, it's called Mr. Make, and the story is based on him. And he's a chap who works and makes things in a workshop. So in my studio, I'll make like a pretend workshop or a pretend cafe and start drawing from that. And then I think because of the way picture books work, they are so entwined with the words, you know, there's a crossover between when you look at the picture and when you look at the writing, and which part of that is the directive isn't always the words. So you might see something happen in the pictures that kind of eggs along the next sentence in the words, kind of thing. And I think that's why picture books are difficult, because you can't just write a story where the words show exactly what's going on in the picture, because that would be a bit boring. You want the viewer to be able to kind of interpret what's going on.
We're sat here in your studio, kind of King's Crossway, and we're upstairs at the moment, downstairs. You walk me through this swarming acrid smell kind of filled my nose as you had done your work down there. Now we're upstairs in your kind of office-y thing.
Yeah.
How do you partition your brain in a day to change between doing the more creative stuff and then getting up here and doing all the other admin that you need to do?
Yeah. Well, basically, I've got different hats that I put on. Not physical hats. Just different ways of thinking, I think. And also, it's quite difficult to always be creative. I think it's a bit of a, when you're sitting on the toilet, you're not always like being creative. You know, obviously, you've got to get into the frame of mind and be in the mood to be creative. Like if you've got a hangover or something, or you're not feeling very well, then it's very difficult to be creative. For me, I think that's I'm someone like Jean-Michel Basquiat, who enjoyed being, well, I don't think he enjoyed being inebriated, but was, you know, that was a power drive for his creativity. For me, I feel like I need to feel really fresh, and also, yeah, mornings are quite good for me. Like, that's, you know, I think how I work and tend to burn out at the end of the day.
So talk to me about that time then. So what time are you starting your most productive part of work, if you say it's in the morning?
Normally about 9 o'clock. So we're actually eating into my creativity.
I'm so sorry. This is creative. This is fine.
I normally come in and at the moment I'm working quite... I'm sort of about two-thirds of the way into this story. So I'm doing a lot of the picture book work, the illustrations. So I'll come in, set up the scene, and then try and fiddle around with the scene for quite a while, and then take a step back from the scene and start drawing from it, and just keep on making lots of illustrations, and then pick the best ones, scan them in, put them into Photoshop, kind of make them look even better than they, you know, play around with the tonal quality of them and stuff like that. Then add them into the main kind of book format, which is a program called InDesign, and then fiddle around with the design of the picture book in that way. So there are lots of like hurdles and processes. The Cranky Caterpillar is about a little girl who hears a strange noise coming from another room, and she goes in and sees the piano is playing by itself. So she further investigates and finds a caterpillar, a ginormous caterpillar, who's very cranky, playing music inside the piano. And she sets about going around trying to improve his mood. That's what the general gist of the story is.
And how did it come into existence? Because if you say that primarily you're an artist and you're an illustrator, and then the writing kind of happens secondary to that, talk to me about how the story became a thing.
So it's slightly backward. I made the sculptures first that are in the story, and then they were all sitting in my studio, and I felt like they needed something else. So I started making a story about them, and I thought the caterpillar lended itself quite well to a story, because the caterpillar is made out of all the piano, the insides of a piano, all the hammers. And I just thought it looked like a caterpillar. So I set about making a story, like a musical story. And obviously the caterpillar turns into the classic, you know, butterfly story. So it is dark, but it has a good ending, which I think is important.
And why did you start making those sculptures then? If you had no real idea at the time they would become the story, where did those pieces come from?
So I've been making object sculptures for quite a long time. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 9, maybe even 10 years now. And I don't know, when I'm walking on the street or I'm in a junkyard or something, I always like to kind of look at things differently and imagine what they could like be interpreted as, and then putting them all together, problem solving, making sculptures out. Like, generally my muse is animals and birds and mammals and stuff like that, so I generally look to see how objects could be interpreted into those kind of forms. And I really like the idea of upcycling things like transforming into a new meaning. And I guess it all kind of comes from the influence of like studying like people like Marcel Duchamp at university, where he kind of uses the found object as a medium for making art. And that's where it all kind of stems from, really.
So you've made your sculptures, you've got the idea that you want this musical story with a happy ending, caterpillar morphing into butterfly. Then what do you do when you write it down? I know that sounds a really, really laymanly easy question, and it sounds like it's so stupid that you could answer it in a sentence. But it's quite tough, I find, to make sure the story that you're telling is clear, it's concise, and it's readable. How are you making sure your story is all of those things?
Well, I think that it's all about process, and you start with the idea and you write down a rough kind of story and make sure that it's got all the right kind of structure to it. So, you know, you need a problem at the beginning, you need a narrative arc, you need a crescendo, and it's all about plotting out the different, because obviously with picture books you need to write spreads, so you'll write a sentence and then you can write underneath it what you envisage to have going on in the picture, which might influence the next sentence. It's about getting all of that down on paper and then polishing it up. Just keep spending time on it, keep on working at it. And I think a really important part of it is actually just forgetting about it for like a month or a couple of weeks or whatever, because then you can come back to it and you're kind of coming back to it like a new person, and you can kind of see things in a new way or overcome problems you didn't think of before.
Now we'll get more with Richard Graham in just a sec, where we'll hear why he thinks artists express their ideas in different ways.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome back to Writer's Routine. We'll get our distinguished diary in just a sec with the daily ritual of the playwright and the Academy Award-winning screenwriter, Sir Tom Stoppard. First, very quickly, let me remind you, if you want to keep across everything we're doing at Writer's Routine, you can do that on our website, which is writersroutine.com, and we update it all the time with all the episodes we've done so far. We've got easy ways that you can find the show as well and get in touch with questions for me, questions for future guests that you want to know about the practices of writing, and also anything you really think about the show. It's all good at writersroutine.com. Also, drop us a follow on Twitter, where I humbly retweet every single morsel of praise that comes my way, so I just let you know how good the show is, really. We are at writerspod on there, and you can get pictures, you can get videos, you can get teaser clips from all our interviews, and a bucket load of hashtags over on Instagram. We are writersroutine on there. Right, distinguished diary time. Every week on the show, we get the daily routine of one of the most successful writers ever. Today, it's the playwright and Oscar award-winning screenwriter, Sir Tom Stoppard. Now, Sir Tom is known for plays like Arcadia, The Real Thing. He also wrote the screenplays for Shakespeare in Love, Brazil, loads more. He's got an Academy Award and some Tonys on the mantelpiece as well. And he's a procrastinator, a huge one. He says that the only thing that actually forces him to sit down and write is fear. And he kind of needs to be frightened to actually get down in front of the typewriter and stare at it for a few hours. Now, he usually stays up all night writing and smoking in his kitchen. He's a relentless chain smoker as well. Quite a wasteful one too. He's known for his smoking method of taking two drags of a fag, stubbing it out, then immediately lighting up a brand new one. Now, he usually stays up all night writing and smoking in his kitchen in the dead, dark quiet while everyone else slept. He has, though, tried to rework this schedule over the years, and he did manage, from time to time, to sit at his desk, almost chain himself there, though, and stay there from 10 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon, working. It never really works out, though. Gradually, he slips back into the old overnight routine, noting that he never really works in the morning unless he's in real trouble. Let's get back then to our guest on today's Writer's Routine, artist, illustrator and author now, Richard Graham, whose picture book Cranky Caterpillar is out right now. It's the story of one girl finding a caterpillar in her piano at home, and then they play music together before, I don't want to spoil the ending, but you kind of know what happens to caterpillars about halfway through their life, don't you? We're talking about his creativity and how, this is Richard Graham, by the way, not the Cranky Caterpillar. We're talking about his creativity and how he changes the type of work hat that he's got on. And also, we talk about why he's a much better artist than I will ever be. I'm very interested in why people's brains work in different ways like that. Also, we find out how he makes sure that kids actually get his stories.
Using onomatopoeia and alliteration and stuff like that is really important, especially for kids, because they can kind of see patterns emerge, which is really important for their learning and stuff. It's just about polishing it. So you might write down a kind of a rough sentence and then come back to it, and then you just keep on playing around with it until it kind of feels right, and you can kind of you can sense that a kid is going to be responsive to that sentence, and that they're going to get something out of it in lots of different ways. So yeah, you're right. I think that each word has to be really specific and really understandable and easy to read, yet also giving a direction It's good to work from a story, and I've kind of learned that from the hard way around. I've written a couple of stories before where I've made sculptures and kind of had a rough story in mind, but it hasn't really come to fruition. And I've tried to, but I think like any advice to anyone is I would always try and start with a story, because then you can, then you've got like a skeleton that you can kind of work with.
At what point in your life did you make the decision you wanted to make money from art?
Well, to be honest, I don't really make that much money. So I think it's more sort of trial and error about what I've been good at and what I've been bad at. Like I'm not very good with numbers. I can't. I've never really bothered with the stock market or anything like that. But I do think I have a creative mind, and I think that my brain works in that kind of spontaneous way, which I think can be a good and a bad thing. I think if it, like when you're creating stuff, I think it can be really useful. But I think in everyday life, having a spontaneous brain can be quite disabling, because you can kind of get distracted and in all different sorts of ways when you should actually just be focusing on something a bit mundane.
Does doing this as a job take away the spontaneity of your brain, because you know you need to force through the creativity, need to make things, you need to write the book, need to build another sculpture? How do you deal with that challenge? Are there any ways that you make yourself be more creative than perhaps you're feeling?
Well, I try and be respectful of that. I try and be quite respectful of that process. If I'm not feeling creative, then I just won't be. And I do have other sort of things that I have to engage with. Like I make quite a lot of commercial sculpture for window displays and like places like Selfridges and things like that. They often need sculptures, and especially at Christmas time, well, the lead up to Christmas, which is sort of now. That palm tree downstairs is for a shop. Being respectful of the creative process and allowing yourself time to breathe, and also coming back to the work with the fresh eyes is really important. And I don't think it's a good idea to kind of force yourself to be creative. Although I do think it's a good idea to do it regularly. It's not really a job. It doesn't feel like a job. I've got all my tools and all my paints and brushes and everything here, and paper and space, and I kind of feel like it's like a safety space for me, and it's a nice place to come every day. Yeah, just make stuff.
Now, I'm rubbish at art, like I'm ghastly at it. Why do you think, when we've both got fairly creative brains, why do you think yours is in tune much more to drawing and building and creating in that way rather than mine is? How does that work?
Well, I guess it's something to do with neuroscience, but I don't know anything about that. So we've all got five senses, and maybe my visual sense is more stronger than my speaking sense. I mean, I'm not very good at speaking. I'm a bit nervous about this radio session, really. But yeah, I think that there's no. I don't think there should be a hierarchy on the how you're creative or anything like that. And I think that you should always try and go with what you're good at. So you're doing your thing and I'm doing mine.
It's not just on the upcycling that you're different, though. I mean, there are thousands of ways of picking up a pencil and simply drawing a line.
Yeah.
How do you define your style, and do you think about it? Is it a conscious decision to draw the way you do, or is that just what your brain tells you?
I think it's just the way my brain tells me. It's probably about your, like... Maybe if some people have got really long arms, they've got a slightly different style to people with short arms. But I don't think about it. I don't think about my style. I mean, I try and be like neat, and I try and like get the form correct and colour it in correctly. And I also like to reference, I also kind of, I guess subconsciously emulate other artists that I'm kind of really drawn to. I really like Picasso and David Hockney, and mine's definitely more scratchy. And I haven't been trained properly in drawing. I have never had some sort of mentor about drawing, so it's very much kind of learned myself.
What's the ultimate aim as for you as an artist, an illustrator, now a writer? Where would you like to end up?
I think that I would like to end up in a place where I've got complete creative freedom, where I don't have to necessarily connect myself to like the commercial world, and you just make things for that you love and that you make things that you really have no constraints on, and there's no rules or regulations as to how you are creative. Like we were saying with the picture books, there are so many, especially for children, there's so many rules and regulations about how you conduct your creativity in that sort of small platform. But that's not to say that I don't enjoy that. I think that it would be fantastic to just to make stuff, which I do anyway, so I don't know what I'm talking about.
What would you do differently about a second picture book since writing your first? Yeah. What did you learn about how you work, about how yeah. maybe you could act better and work better? Yeah. What would you do differently?
Yeah, I mean, writing the first picture book was a massive learning curve, and this one that I'm writing now, it's all in sort of a quite relaxed rhyme, which I thought was missing from the first. Well, I think everyone kind of likes a rhyming picture book. This one's a bit more, it's got more rhymes, lyricalness to it. And there's more colour in this one. There's, like you said, the Cranky Caterpillar does have quite dark tones and is a bit moody, whereas this one's a bit more lively, and it's completely different to the last one, which I really like as well.
And it's Mr. Make.
It's called Mr. Make, yeah.
Perfect. Well, I'm very excited to see it. Thank you so much for having me over.
Pleasure.
Right, so that is it for another Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to illustrator and writer Richard Graham. His book, Cranky Caterpillar, is out right now. You can even look around his studio in King's Cross in London at the Cranky Caterpillar Museum. And you can find out loads more about that, about his work, about how you can get into the studio over on his website, which is mrmake.co.uk. Now, we'll have loads of links to all of his stuff on our website, writersroutine.com. On there, you can listen to all of our old episodes as well, where you can get in touch with the show. Remember to find us on Twitter and Instagram, and you can subscribe to the podcast as well. And if you leave us a review on the iTunes podcast store, that would seriously be like the greatest Christmas present ever for me, to go along with all the books that I imagine my family are currently getting me because they've discovered that I do a writing podcast. We've got a few weeks off right now as well. We're back in the new year with more tips and tricks from the most successful authors. So to keep across when we're back, make sure you do follow the show on Twitter. We'll have all the updates in the news on there for you. We are at Writers Pod, and I'll see you soon. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.